Oh, God, how early in the morning is it? Do you realize it's 53 degrees warmer in my refrigerator than it is outside, and you want a podcast? Oh, all right. Hey, let me get ready.
Once again, to Crazy Comics and Stories, it's me, your charming, delightful, old Uncle Rap Bastard, and at the other end of the series of tubes and wires that we call the internets is Joe, Crazy Writer. How you doing today, Joe?
I'm not wearing pants.
I am so glad that you're far away.
Yep. Tell them what the temperature is outside, Strode.
When I went to my car at the group home to start it up for my drive home, you know how the new cars they've got where you can see the temperature outside?
Mm-hmm.
18 below.
18 below. And I'm in the middle of the city, so I'm at a balmy 12 below. Ooh. But that's not what we count. We count that pesky wind chill. Because if I was outside standing in my altogether, it would feel like 30 below here in Minnesota.
40 below over here in
yeah,
lovely.
Because I got buildings. Now, there's a thing called a heat effect island where because the city's got more pavement and more buildings, the temps are always a little bit warmer.
Yeah.
In the summertime, it's fabled that that prevents like tornadoes and that from rumbling through the city. It's not true, but it does affect sometimes when you see like this big rainstorm coming and it hits the city and then it kind of breaks up and goes around the city and reforms because it absorbs all the heat, but it breaks it up. So although you got a feel for Florida, Corey, their high temperature is 53 right now. They're warning people, dress in layers. Limit time outdoors, Minnesota. Hold my beer.
Yeah.
56 below. It's 50 below air temperature up in Ely, Minnesota. I think that's where one of our listeners, Jamie, is headquartered when he's not driving around the state. So, yeah, and that's where I want to move.
When I watch AEW Dynamite on Wednesdays, which you can hear me talk about over at pwinsiderelite.com. Because it's kind of an outdoor building. What it is, it's this amphitheater connected to the Jacksonville Jaguars football stadium. So they have this amphitheater they use, and it's called Daly's Place, and that's where they've been doing All Elite Wrestling show since, I think, either April or May of last year. Jim Ross does not like the cold because he will say at least a couple of times during the show what the temperature is. Like, these wrestlers are out here and it's 45 degrees.
Yeah, them Oklahoman sissies.
Well, and you'll watch if you pay attention. They've got these huge heaters with blowers that blow hot air into the ring because, you know, half the guys, they're out there in trunks. And I don't mean, you know, with leggings. I mean, nope, it's like swim trunks.
Oh, yeah.
I know there was a WrestleMania they did in New Jersey, but they said it was New York. It was an outdoor stadium. And it was early April in New York / New Jersey. Pretty cold, so they would show people in the stands with coats on. And here's Randy Orton coming to the ring, and the shortest briefs you've ever seen. It's like, yeah, he really hurried to get down to the ring where the heaters are.
Well, the one thing I know, because when I used to run cross country back when I actually could run, and when you're when you start working out, you don't even notice how cold it gets because you're getting warm in that. And if I recall that right, I think there was like steam coming off these guys' bodies because they were working so hard. But, you know, we try to stay positive in this air podcast. At least it's another mosquito-free day in Minnesota.
Why, yes, it is. Matter of fact, no bugs at all outside.
No. No, they're probably crawling in your woodwork, but, you know, that's a different subject.
Every so often, I'll get one of those, I forget what they're called. They're like stink bugs.
Yeah, we call them chinch bugs, but I know what you're talking about.
They're the ones that in the fall, when the sun is shining on the side of your house, the side of your house will have tons of them because they're like, oh, it's getting cold. I'll be in the sun. Every so often, one will crawl out here. And I go, oh, you should have stayed. You should have stayed hidden because you're going outside.
Yeah. Corey is not a friendly person in the Strode compound.
Not when it comes to bugs, no.
Wants to be alone. God, there's sometimes when we get the ones, they're like about half inch long with antennas, and they just kind of, they look like, oh, they're happy to stay there. Okay, you get to stay there, and then we're throwing you out tonight. Although sometimes during the winter, if we like find like a ladybug or something on one of the plants, we'll just let it be. Okay, stay in the plant. You go anywhere else, you die.
Well, it depends if it's a ladybug or if it's a Japanese beetle. Because if it's a Japanese beetle, those are very, very destructive. I learned that from my parents had those a few years ago. And, you know, eventually it got to the point there were so many there would be clusters. And Dad would go around the house with a vacuum cleaner vacuuming them all off the wall.
Super vacuum. Oddly enough, temperatures, wrestling, and chinch bugs are not what we're here to talk about.
I'm actually trying to look and see when the cold wave is going to break, because tonight our low here in lovely Chaska, 22 below.
Wow, heat wave.
Yeah.
I happen to have our local forecast up, and it looks like Tuesday we'll get to a balmy 10.
Oh.
And by Saturday, we'll be back to 30. So we've got like another, I mean, tomorrow's going to be another day. We're recording this as of Valentine's Day. So for those of you who, you know, realize where we're recording. So the Monday right afterwards, it's going to be a 2 below for the high. And then it'll start slowly warming up. It'll be, you know, 10 during the day, -4 at night. But by next Saturday, by the time we record this here podcast again, not counting the 500th episode, we'll be back to, I don't know what the hell is normal anymore.
Yeah, neither do I.
Yeah, we don't really care.
There is no normal. There is no normal.
Only Zool.
It is fun that I have weather alerts set up for my Alexa. There she is. I woke her up. But you'll get this thing in the middle of the night. There is a wind chill warning. Okay.
Yeah, I have a smart weather radio. First of all, I turned off everything on my phone because, like you said, middle of the night. But the only thing that my weather radio will go off for is if there's a severe storm within the immediate ring of me. So if it's just Chaska, it won't go off. But if it gets into Hennepin County, it will. Because I can actually have it by counties. And then, you know, I spend all that time getting it programmed. And then, of course, as soon as my wife unplugs it for the winter, then I have to reprogram it the following year. And so just leave it. It's a real pain in the butt to program. But it's unlike when it used to be like, oh, there's a tornado up in Duluth. Better alert the whole state.
Yeah. Well, we're here to talk about funny books.
We are. I kind of like talking about weather. It's a Minnesota thing. We dig talking about weather. Cold enough for you, Strode.
I think I told my mom, she asked what the temperature was, and I said, well, you know, I'm going outside. And, you know, I was looking at the TV, and, you know, if you have cable, it'll go, here's the time, and here's the weather. And it was like, oh, 9 degrees, that's not bad. And I go outside, and it's like, oh, it must be -9. Yeah, it must be -9.
Yeah, that dash wasn't a space filler.
My mom asked, you know, what the weather was like, and I said, "Oh yeah, it was 10 below, so I'm gonna have to button my coat."
But did you do what we like to do in this time of year? You take a glass of boiling water and you throw it up in the air?
No, I didn't. Now, they did that a few years ago. I forget when it was. It was probably like 5 or 6 years ago at this point when it got like super cold, you know, like 30 below. And they were having people show up at the ER because they weren't paying attention to the way the wind was blowing.
Yeah.
They were throwing the water in the air and scalding, boiling hot water was landing on people.
Well, it's actually mist, so it's even worse.
While it's 30 below. It in.
Yeah, it's still hot and boiling. It just, you throw it up in the air and it vaporizes into a boiling cloud. That's what we do for fun up here, folks. Me, before I went home from work yesterday, I got myself an ice cream bar and ate it outside. Mm-mm.
But we have previews in our hands.
We
Joe
do.
Just got his.
I did, and I dutifully done did that there. I ran out of D's. Homework. Oh, somebody's calling me.
Hello?
Hello? Hello? Can't Hello? Talk now. Potting. All right.
Who was it?
I don't know. I told him I couldn't talk.
Okay.
So this is always a, how do we call it, interactive podcast. So if you got your previews for February 21, go ahead and grab it and you can read along. So let me open my notes here because we take it right in order as it appears in the previews. And
I got covers, by the way. One cover is for Guardians of the Galaxy. No, it's not a new first issue. But with the 12th issue of the book, they are changing the team up.
Yeah.
On the back is a new comic by Jeff Johns and Gary Frank, who did Doomsday Clock. Jeff Johns, now working at Image. And then I always like to point out what's on the spine.
And yeah, they fill this sucker with ads, let me tell you.
And on the spine, it's Avatar, The Last Airbender, statues and toys.
Cool. Well, you know, I'm going to have you, since you mentioned Geiger, go right to page 32, which will take you inside the previews of the Image thing. You already mentioned the creators. I'm going to recommend buying this one. I'm just going to read it because I'm not good at paraphrasing. This is set in the year after a nuclear war ravaged the planet. Desperate outlaws battle for survival in a world of radioactive chaos. Out past the poison wasteland lives a man even the Nightcrawlers and the Organ People fear. Some name him Joe Glow. Others call him Meltdown Man, but his name is Geiger. Now, first off, I studied nuclear war in college. This is part of the superpower relations that surprisingly is still very much relevant today, but we don't talk about it much. So anytime you do the post-apocalyptic thing, I'm kind of like, well, okay, I'm interested. But now you throw in Jeff Johns and Gary Frank and Brad Anderson, and they give you 1, 2, 3 pages preview. I'm like all over this. This is a new series, I believe. I'm not big on starting new series, but I definitely will check this one out. And I'm on board for the duration.
Also like to point out on the cover, it's got the go-go checks from DC in the 60s.
I got Gurr on mine.
No, I look on page 32.
You're talking the cover of Geiger. I thought you went back to the cover of previews.
No. See, the cover of Geiger has the infamous DC go-go checks.
Yes. What you got up for Image?
First off, the Old Guard, new miniseries. It's a Greg Rucka miniseries. Greg Rucka series. This is the third one. The Old Guard is about a group of people who don't die. And there was a Netflix movie adapting the first miniseries. This is the third miniseries. It's Greg Rucka. He's one of those writers who I buy sight unseen. So I suggest that you do as well. But do like I'm doing. Wait till it's a trade paperback. Because, you know, miniseries, I'm to the point where I don't even want to have miniseries in my collection anymore because it's okay. Here's five. No, just one book. Just one book so I can read it all at once.
See, and I'm the other way because I do a lot of the eBays, which I'm sure your people are shocked to know. So if it's something like that that I really like, well, I'll read it. If I don't like it, I'll sell it. If it goes insane, like the Ice Cream Man number one is like a $300 number one book, hey, I'll sell the whole collection and get myself the graphic novels. So, yeah, I this one I'm on the fence on, mainly because it's part of a Netflix movie, and I'm kind of like, well, if I'm not big on the tie-ins or even the source material, I don't know if I necessarily want to buy a miniseries on it. However, it is star-studded. I don't know if that – does that mean anything? I don't know.
But it's a great book. Really a great book.
How about the show, though? Have you watched the show?
I have not, but people really like it, and I guess they're making another one. It was a movie and not a show.
But it's on Netflix.
Yes.
And it's got Charles Theron.
Let's see. Book-wise, they are doing another reprinting of the Hack Slash series, which is... kind of a inverting the horror movie trope. She is a girl who hunts down the slashers. It's kind of like the last girl in a slasher movie, except she hunts down slasher killers. It's a series that's been going on for a long time. They did they collected it in, they called them omnibuses, but they were really just trade paperbacks. They weren't really big enough to be an omnibus. Well, now they're doing it as hardcovers because it has once again been optioned for a movie.
Sure. That's some good money there. And I'm on page 42 with Jules Verne's Lighthouse, a 5-issue miniseries. At the edge of the galaxy, there's a giant supercomputer known as the Lighthouse, the only brain powerful enough to navigate ships through naturally occurring wormholes, potentially cutting off months or years off a spaceship's journey. Three humans, one alien, and a nanny bot have manned the remote station for years in relative peace until the arrival of a cutthroat pirate band that threatens the future civilization and reveals that each of the Lighthouse crew have been hiding a shocking secret. He who controls the Lighthouse controls this part of the galaxy. They gave you four smaller pages of art. It looks pretty good. I'd use a magnifying glass because I'm getting old, you know. So for a miniseries, I'll give it a shot. And like I said, anytime I get something like this later on down the road, eventually I'll read it and review it and see if my instincts were correct.
Another collection I want to point out is the final book in the Sex Criminals. They've collected the final batch of the comic Sex Criminals in Big Hard Sex Criminals Volume 3. This is a story where two people find out if they have sex, it stops crime. So it stops time. So they go and rob banks and steal stuff.
Why not? Why not?
And hijinks ensue. And it's Matt Fraction and Chip Zdarsky. It's a lot of fun. This is the third one. I have bought it in the great big books and really enjoy it.
On page 54, across from Hack and Slash, that Corey mentioned earlier, Decorum Hardcover. Jonathan Hickman, Mike Huddleston. There are many assassins in the known universe. This is the story of the most well-mannered one. You got me. Collects the miniseries 1-8. This is one of those where I think I might have mentioned it in the past. And I'm like, well, it's going to come out in a hardcover. A little expensive, $40, but 400 pages. So I'll give that one a shot. That's pretty much it for me image-wise. You got anything else interesting, Corey?
I always want to point out what they are pushing, and what they're pushing this time is Elephant Men, which is weird because Elephant Men left Image and went over to Comixology. But they are pushing Elephant Men, which I remember I read the early issues and thought it was okay. Did not get bowled over by it, but Image is pushing it this month. So if you are interested, your retailers probably got a deal on it. And that was it for me. Dark Horse is next, Joe.
I got only two things in Dark Horse other than what I normally collect. And if you jump to page 90, two things that happen to be across from each other, so it'll be real easy. The first one's on the maybe list because I got to, you know, price everything out. I do still buy on a budget. Madman Library Edition Volume 1 Hardcover. 680 pages for $100 retail. It covers Madman's first appearance through his mysterious origins, his adventures through time, and let's see, what do we got? For the record, the original series, Madman Adventures 1 through 3, Madman Comics 1 through 10, bonus pinups from such hacks, Frank Miller, Jack Kirby, Mobius. Guys never made anything and didn't make a dime in the comic industry. He could have done better, Michael. But this is interesting because I have read very little Madman, just like I did with Hellboy. I'll just pick it up collected when I think of it, and this might be a good way to do it. And across from it is a series that I fell in love with, Shalon Cowboy. Am I saying that right?
Yep, Shalon Cowboy.
The Burly Man series. I believe this is his. Is this the original series 1 through 7?
Yes.
Now I may have this in trade paperback. I know I sold the comics years ago because it was one of those where I liked and I switched. So I just got to run through my collection. But it's either back in print or the first time in print with Dark Horse. And then, of course, below it is Shalon Cowboy Shemp Buffet. Both series are a lot of fun. It's, the cowboy is basically, man, a few words, although his steed that he rides on certainly is a blabbermouth. And when he's like, what was that Simpson thing? But Marge, the little guy hasn't moved. When he does, it's going to be really good. Yeah, when Shalon Cowboy moves. Yeah. So I definitely recommend these two if you've never visited them before. Anything you got in your plate of must-buy?
Yes, on that same page is Harrow County Omnibus Volume 2, which is the horror story by Cullen Bunn. This is the second volume, which collects, I believe it is, the rest of the series. So if you get Volume 1 and 2, you get the whole thing. Really good horror comic. I like to point out the EC stuff, so I'm pointing out on page 96, Saddle Justice. This is a pre-trend book. EC had what they called three time periods. Pre-trend, which was the stuff they published when William Gaines took over from his father and really didn't want to publish comics, so he let Al Feldstein kind of do what he wanted. And they're like, cowboy books are selling. Put out a cowboy book. William Gaines, his father died in a boating accident, and he was the son who took over. He wanted to be a science teacher in school, but his mother kind of said, no, you need to take over your dad's business. And in these pre-trend books, he and Al Feldstein found out they were huge fans of radio mysteries. So they started putting in horror stories. And when they saw, oh, we have fun doing these, that's when you got the new trend, which was Tales from the Crypt, Haunt of Fear, weird science, crime suspense stories. And then there was post-trend, which were the books like Psychoanalysis and everything after the Comics Code came in and killed them. Is Saddle Justice any good? No. They're really poorly done cowboy books. You had some of the EC artists, but they weren't they weren't unleashed yet. When they got to the new trend, they were told, draw your own style. These books, it was Al Feldstein would lay them out, and the artist would follow his layouts, and they were pretty bland. But if you're into EC, you know, you have to have them, because that's what we do. We're comic fans. Yeah. We're idiots that way.
Yeah.
And then there is...
Let's go to DC. Oh, well, are you still in Dark Horse?
Yes, one more. 103, The Pride Omnibus. This is a series I do not remember at all, and I found out it's because it's digital. And I pick up the Dark Horse Omnibuses because they're nice, big, thick trade paperbacks that are reasonably priced. They're usually 500 to 600 pages with in color. In The Pride, Fab Man is sick of being seen as a joke, tired of the LGBTQ community being seen as inferior to straight heroes. He thinks it's about damn time somebody did something about it. Bringing together some of the world's greatest LGBTQ superheroes, The Pride is born to protect the world and fight prejudice, misrepresentation, and injustice, not to mention a punk, pesky supervillain or two. The Pride Adventures brings a whole host of extra self-contained stories and adventures starring the heroes of the Pride. See the team members fight down crazed shooters, alien invasions, a 60-foot-tall drag queen. I had never heard of this before, but if Dark Horse is going to put it out as an omnibus, I'm going to try it because their editorial staff knows good stuff, and they wouldn't pick it up if they didn't think that it was good.
I will look forward to a review of that when it comes out. And when you're done with it, I'd like to borrow it.
Okay.
Because that was one of those where I was kind of like, and if I might have to go online and maybe look a little bit more because it is digital. So, you know, if you want to preview it, you can look at it. But I'm still on a budget.
DC is fascinating because they're now done with Future State for the most part.
Well, I've only got... one book I'm buying.
Boy, they got a lot of number ones this month, though.
The only thing I'm picking up is JLA because Bendis is doing it. And I'm doing it strictly on Bendis. Nothing else tripped my trigger to the point where I want to watch it or read it.
I'm interested in Robin because it's Joshua Williamson. Damian Wayne is going to get a Robin series. And the art looks fun. And it's Joshua Williamson, who's one of the better DC writers who plays around in their universe. Batman the Dark Knight by Tom Taylor and Andy Kubert, although I think they're changing the name to Batman the Detective. They announced that over the weekend, so already changes. But Andy Kubert doing some Batman stuff. That's one that I will pick up as a trade. Remember how I said they are... The Future State is over, except maybe not utterly and completely.
Yeah.
The next Batman. Which is, I believe it's Lucas Fox's son.
Batman.
Is getting a miniseries. Joe, I'm kind of surprised you're not picking up the Batman and Scooby-Doo mysteries.
You're Batman. Ah. I thought about it, but, and I still may go back for it. But, yeah, my eyes are glazing over the Batman stuff. You know, DC is suffering from the same problem that Marvel did, you know, years ago. Oh, well, we got one X-Men book, so if we sell a dozen X-Men books, that'll be even better. And I can't help but think, no, what you're doing is you're diluting what could be just a big seller into a bunch of smaller sellers. And, you know, that's what the AT&T overlords want. Batman all the time, every time, every, you know, I just.
Well, and it's more, they've learned that, okay, we put it, you know, with 52 and then again with the thing they did to fix the new 52. It's okay, we could try all these other books, but all anybody wants to buy is Batman.
Yeah.
You have to go where your sales are.
I just don't buy there's that many Batman. And you can probably When you get your sales figures, tell me if I'm correct, because I'd be very surprised if any of these are in the top 50.
We don't get DC sales figures because they're not through Diamond.
Yep. And so I still think you're overkilling it. There's just way too much. You know, even the miniseries. I mean, you know, I'm sorry, but if all you're going to be is Batman comics, you're going to leave me behind, which is fine. I mean, I've been complaining about that for ages. Like I said, the only book I'm looking at, and even this, you know, there's not a lot of graphic novels. Usually
this month for graphic novels was terrible.
I would look, you know, and I'll buy the graphic novels of stuff in the past. But and the one I'm looking at is the Justice League New 52 Omnibus Volume 1.
Yep.
And the only reason I might not buy it is because when I read it, I wasn't that impressed to begin with. I mean, Jim Lee's art is awesome. But for $125, you're reading a bunch of stories. What's nice is they're all tied together. I mean, you get the Aquaman, you get the Dark, you get the Trinity of Sin, everything that ties into it in one smooth storyline. But these never struck me as stories I ever cared to reread again. And when I got a choice between that and some of the other things we'll talk about, or some of the things I already passed about, I mean, I'm more excited about getting something like Madman, which I've never read, versus something like this. I may still have the comics sitting in my collection just because I haven't gotten around to getting rid of them. So, yeah, this one's definitely on the shelf. It sounds like a good package, but it just doesn't have the zing to it where I'm like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe they're doing this. I got to buy it right now.
There are a few that I want to point out. This one I'm not getting, but if I didn't already have the two books they're collecting, I'd buy it in a heartbeat, and that is Bizarro Comics, the deluxe edition.
Yeah, I have that already.
It reprints the two hardcovers, Bizarro Comics and Bizarro World, which are really just strange stories by non-traditional DC artists. They're both really good, and it is the only place you're going to get the Super Baby story that caused an Elseworlds book to be destroyed after printing.
Which is really dumb, but that's a different story.
On the next page is Bill Willingham's Fables Compendium 2. They are reprinting the entire series in big, thick trade paperbacks, which is weird that they're not doing it in omnibuses. They're doing it in compendiums. I don't know why that is. There's going to be four overall. But Fables is a really good series, and it's nice to have it all in one great big book. When they first announced this, it was going to have the Fables novel in it, but they do not have the Fables novel in the final solicitation, which is kind of odd because the novel did tie into the comic. This is a book I would get if it were cheaper. The Flash, The Death of Iris West hardcover. It reprints Flash 270 to 284, which is the story where his wife is killed by Professor Zoom. And then he has to, first they make it into a mystery. And then when he does track down Professor Zoom, he holds them responsible. And it really doesn't wrap that story up because the final fate of Dr. Zoom is what starts the interminable Trial of the Flash, which was a story that lasted 3 years. They actually put it out in a showcase. And I remember at the time, I was just starting to get DC, and Fred Hembeck was so excited that Carmine Infantino had come back to the Flash that I picked it up and started reading it. And I remember, you know, comics were only 60 cents, so I was reading it going, it gets better, right? It gets better, right? It's really not this terrible, right? And then they announced that Flash 350 was the last issue. So I was like, well, I might as well finish the story. But, oh, my God, that story was just awful. And Robert Ingersoll in the Comic Buyer's Guide, he had a column called The Law is a Ass, where he would basically take apart legal errors in comics for a humorous column. Basically, every time a new issue of The Flash came out, he had a new column because they got everything wrong. Everything wrong about the law, everything wrong about investigation, everything. Kerry Bates can be a good writer, but boy, on Flash, he just wasn't. Just wasn't any good. The next page is a book that was going to be an omnibus. Joe, do you remember why they said the Impulse omnibus would not be coming out?
I don't.
They did not have film, so they would have to scan it from the comics, and the paper they used on the comics meant that the scans weren't going to be good enough for an omnibus. So instead, we're going to get a series of trade paperbacks. This one is the first 12 issues of Impulse with 4 issues of The Flash for $35. No. Now, I'm going to pick it up because I could get it for about half that. But that's way too expensive for, you know, only, what is it, only 376 pages. If you're going to charge as much as one of the Marvel Epic books, it should have as many pages as one of the Marvel Epic books. And other than that, gosh, you know, the Justice League New 52 Omnibus is tempting.
Pretty light.
This Shazam World's Mightiest Mortal reprints all the stuff that came after Shazam's book got canceled. And again, this is one of those books I'd snap it up in a heartbeat if it was a $30, $25 trade paperback.
Oh, yeah.
$30 hardcover. But it's $50 hardcover. That's insanely expensive.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about it when we get to eBay.
So that is it for DC. Next.
IDW.
Yep.
I got one thing in IDW other than, you know, whatever I pick up normally. Page 116.
My Little Pony Transformers 2.
Nope, I didn't believe they had the characterization of the ponies right in the first series, so I am going to ignore the second series.
You have yet to give us a review of that, by the way.
Yes.
You promised.
That's okay. I will get around to that and Spider-Man Brand New Day reviews very shortly. Good. Although I will say, like on that page 116, there's a graphic novel called The Delicacy. It's by James Albron, a British writer and illustrator. I kind of looked at it to give you a couple pages, but essentially it's Tulip and his brother Rowan have left the simple comforts of their remote Scottish island with a plan to grow succulent organic vegetables in an idyllic market garden. And open a restaurant serving these wholesome culinary delights to the busy sprawl of London. Oh, what an age that we can have a graphic novel like this, huh? Unfortunately, they discover a deliriously scrumptious new species of mushroom that brings diners in droves, capitulating their small restaurant to succeed beyond their wildest dreams. They're pressured by the demands of a hungry city to crack the secrets of their new ingredient's growth. But how much will he sacrifice to feed his own insatiable ambition? Dun, dun, dun. It sounded interesting. I'll give it a shot. Other than that, that's it for IDW.
I didn't have anything with IDW this month.
And it happens.
Marvel.
Marvel, hang on. I got to grab my Marvel. Now, good old discount comic book service, they sent me two previews last month's. I don't need, and this month's, which I gotta say I do like looking at the previews more than I like trying to slough through online. Although when you do it online, what's nice is everything's alphabetical. What do I got here? Page 20. Finally, they're going to ship. Oh, I'm sorry, not page 20. Where is it? Stupid Marvels. I'm trying to find the Marvels, which is
that is on page 4.
There it is. The 20 refers to the fact that if you order this, you ordered it back in March 2020. So for those of you who actually ordered this, I think this is kind of stupid of Marvel. Obviously, for a creator, there must be some cost thing involved, because for a retailer, you're able to adjust your orders up and down. But for you and I, you have to use that. Probably easy. Just go to your comic shop and say, hey, I want to get the Marvels. It's Kurt Busiek, covers by Alex Ross. How do you say that? Yulare Sinar. And what it is, it's basically Kurt Busiek writing past and present in an all new ongoing series. And Kurt could write a freaking phone book and it would be absolutely fantastic. I think you said it earlier, Corey. This is basically Astro City. Since Astro City is not selling, he's going to bring his same sensibility to Marvels. And I'm looking forward to it just because I'm real excited to see what Kurt comes up with. They give you the order code all the way back in March. Why they don't resolicit, I don't know. It internally, it's probably the same. I mean, for retailers, hey, you can adjust your codes up or down. All I know is we've been waiting over a year for this sucker, and it's finally coming out. So definitely jump on board. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4 different variant covers. I'm sure there'll be others. So this is one that I'm very excited for. What you got up on your plate, Mr. Strode?
I'm going to be picking it up as a trade, but I do want to point out the Mighty Valkyries. Yep, that's right. Jason Aaron is continuing his story of Jane Foster as the as Valkyrie. So he's not done with Thor yet. It's a miniseries. Jane Foster thought she was the last of the Valkyries. Now there are more after the King in Black miniseries. So Jason Aaron's still doing some Thor. There is another X-Men book, The Way of X, which looks like it's going to be highlighting Nightcrawler. Hopefully they're going to be putting that into the X-Men trade paperbacks that I pick up.
I'm going to point out a comic on page 61. I'm not buying it, but you might want to. Corey, do you remember the first female Thor?
Yes.
Do you remember how people went apeshit over it?
Yes.
Do you think they'll do the same thing when Elektra is Daredevil?
They already did. That was Daredevil number 25. Joe, go to the eBays. And tell me how much Daredevil number 25 is going for.
Dun, 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 dun. He fires up the Kratron 4000. The atomic powers batteries. Turbines to speed. Roger and Wilco.
Don't forget to fasten your seatbelt.
Oh, and I better put the number sign in. Oh, forgot to carry the 12. All right. Dun, dun, dun. Only a mere $3.99.
But this version's,
well, this is a second print. First print's starting about $22 and going up. So, yep. You had your chance. You blew it.
You blew it.
You blew it. So, and
you mean
knows?
You are skipping over on page 15. The Return of Darkhawk by the original creator, Danny Fingeroth.
And if you didn't get that number one, you missed out. You blew it. You blew it. Forget about it.
No, you could still get it.
Yeah, for, a couple $100.
I remember when Darkhawk came out, no one cared.
Nope.
There must be a movie or a TV show where he's going to show up somewhere for everybody to go, oh my God, Darkhawk! Because Darkhawk was terrible.
Yep.
It was god awful.
All those books from that era. I mean, She-Hulk, one.
She-Hulk was the John Byrne one. John Byrne She-Hulk.
Gruber just sold his run for like over $400.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And the weird thing is, when Byrne left She-Hulk, I know this will shock you, Joe. He left She-Hulk in the middle of a story in a huff because somebody did a story that he didn't like involving She-Hulk.
Oh, poor sweet baby.
Then Steve Gerber came in, did a great run. When his run was up, John Byrne came back and basically treated it as if all of those other issues didn't exist. He ignored what everybody else had done and just went back to what he was doing on She-Hulk. And I think it was at that point because that was around the same time he did the same stunt on West Coast Avengers, and he'd done it on Superman. I was like, yeah, I'm kind of done with John Byrne. You know, when you're working at a company, you're kind of, okay, yeah, this character isn't owned by me, it's owned by the company. Especially when you're not the one who created it. But, you know, that's okay.
I don't have any other new comics or anything I'm buying. Anything for you?
Chip Zdarsky, who did the Spider-Man Life Story, is doing a Spider-Man miniseries called Spider-Shadow, which is what if Peter Parker became Venom. We'll pick that up as a trade. And I think that is it for new issues. For all the people who lost their minds over the new Spider-Man costume, I'd like to point you to issues 36 and 37, where he's back in the original costume. And would also like to remind you that when everybody started getting mad about the new Spider-Man costume, you know what picture I posted, Joe?
Oh, the one from Web of Spider-Man?
Yep, spider armor from Web of Spider-Man number one, which didn't even last through that issue. Everybody gets mad about that stuff. It's like, dude, calm down.
Yeah.
You know, the only person who constantly changes his costume is Iron Man. And he didn't even do that until they got kind of to the 80s. And they went, oh, he would be upgrading this. Cool. And I think that is it for the regular series. Once again, there are no True Believers.
Nope.
I have still not heard anything from Marvel, so reminds me of when I would say, hey, you haven't had an essential in a while. Are you doing that anymore? And you radio silence.
Yeah. I mean, and really, for the True Believers, they should tie them to an event or, you know, anything coming out, like with Dark Hawk, Star, what's his name? Whatever the Dark Hawk. You know, have a True Believers of the original number one. I mean, that to me is a natural tie-in. But yeah, what do you know? We give you guys million-dollar ideas every podcast, and nobody listens to us. No one gives us feedback. We don't even have a Wikipedia page.
They didn't even do any of the facsimile editions this month.
Yeah, which is too bad, because, again, another million-dollar idea. Just start from the number one, and just every quarter, every bi-monthly, put out another number one facsimile. I'd buy them. It'd be kind of fun to have that in my collection. Instead, on page 83, this is one of those, oh, my God, I can't believe it. I'm going to buy it right now, get it out quick as possible, even though it's not shipping until, I don't know, years from now. X-Factor by Peter David Omnibus. I've loved Peter David's Omnibus. I've loved his X-Factor. He could write the phone book, and I would buy it. That's a dated reference. I should probably update that somehow. Anyways, this is his first
book.
Transformative X-Factor run in one volume, where he took what was the much derided return of the original X-Men and the punking out of Cyclops towards Madeline. And anyways, it totally changed it on its heel, because suddenly you had Havoc, Polaris, Quicksilver, Multiple Man, Wolvesbane, and Strong Guy as the all-new, all-different X-Factors, sanctioned by the U.S. government to protect humans from mutants, and vice versa. And this was a good run. The appropriate tie-ins are with it. And obviously it's volume one, because he did X-Factor for quite some time. And this, to me, would be just like his run on Hulk. This is the way I want to collect it and keep it in my collection. I will probably go with the Strowman cover, rather than the Quesada cover, just because it's more quintessential X-Factor to me. So I'm very excited about that one. Anything else? I got one more, but anything you got, Corey?
Oh, so many. Marvel.
Yeah, but you just kind of read the whole thing. Well, I want to know what you're buying versus what you just think is cool.
Same thing. I've talked about it previously. Marvel August 1961 Omnibus. This reprints all the Marvel books that were on the stands when Fantastic Four number one came out. I am not buying the direct market cover. Normally I do, but that's just another version of the Fantastic Four number one. So I'm going to be buying the other cover, but this reprints Fantastic Four number one, as well as Journey into Mystery number 73 and 74, Kathy, Life with Millie, Patsy Walker, Amazing Adventures, Kid Cole Outlaw, Linda Carter, Student Nurse, Millie the Model, not just Life with Millie, but Millie the Model, Millie the Model. There were more Millie the Model books than superhero books. Strange Tales, Tales to Suspense, Tales to Astonish, Gunsmoke Western, Love Romances, Teenage Romance, Amazing Adult Fantasy number 7, Patsy and Hetty, that's Patsy Walker. So that's two Patsy Walker books as well. And Rawhide Kid. This one is not going to sell real well. I don't care. I want it. I do want to point out the Fantastic Four Omnibus Volume 3 new printing, because Marvel said that they have gone back and rescanned the artwork to clean it up and make it look better. So thanks a lot, Marvel, for those of us who bought the first printing.
Yep, yep.
There will be two volumes of What If Classic. The only problem is they will not reprint What If number 16. This month is volume 1, which takes us up to issue 22, and then the next volume will reprint the rest, which I have not heard yet if it's going to stop with issue 47 or if it will reprint that one shot that came out a couple years after What If ended, which has a story that was sitting in a drawer, and one of the editors opened the drawer and said, "Hey, we got an entire Iron Man What If story. You want to print it?"
Print that, baby.
But yeah, the entire What If series, except for that one issue with Fu Manchu in it, going to be reprinted. I also am picking up The X Factor by Peter David Omnibus. See here. I have a copy of Marvel's as a hardcover, but they're putting out a Treasury edition.
Oh, you would I treasure like those.
This is the Marvel miniseries they did, which has all sorts of great art and stories. It's basically a bunch of short stories. The cover is kind of the, if you've seen the original cover to Marvel's, it's the Alex Ross painted version of the original Human Torch coming out. This is kind of a couple minutes after that. So I've got the Marvel's Treasury Edition and now this miniseries Treasury Edition. I've been reading the miniseries on Marvel Unlimited. It is fantastic.
The other one I'm looking at is one, if you've never read it, I recommend you pick it up. Page 107, Squadron Supreme Trade Paperback, written by Mark Gruenwald. One of the best stories I've ever read. It's, you know, we're always talking about what if superheroes existed in a real world? Well, this is one of the first I remember that Mark did. It's Squadron Supreme. They're on their own world. It does cross over with a Captain America, which is in the book, which is cool. Two different covers. You can get the original Bob Hall cover, or of course the always beautiful Alex Ross covers. So this one, yeah, if you've never read it, definitely pick it up. Give yourself a treat.
On page 98, Iron Man by Mike Grell. Sadly, he did not draw this, but when they were trying to figure out what to do with Iron Man before the movie, Mike Grell did a run that lasted about 20 issues. So I'm picking that up. There is also Ghost Rider Robbie Reyes, who's the current Ghost Rider if you read the Avengers. That entire series and the miniseries that spun out after it is going to be collected. I have not read those books, but I do like the character after reading him in the Avengers. Then we get to the Epic Collections. Morbius is getting a second one, which reprints all of the Morbius stories up to his series in the 90s. So they pretty much, with this, they ended the story of Morbius. And then, of course, you know, the cure that saved him, they got rid of it because they wanted to bring the character back. But I have that in the omnibus, but I'm pointing it out because they're putting it out due to the movie, which has been pushed back again. The movie was supposed to be out, I think, either the end of this month or sometime next month. No, they've pushed it back to October because theaters still aren't opening.
Yeah, there's a big hubbub online about, you know, are we going to do a hybrid Black Widow, you know, like they're going to do with the Godzilla Kong and some Wonder Woman, you know, or are they just going to make it theater only or blah, 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 whatever.
Disney has said it's theater only. They're not looking at putting it out on the on Disney Plus. But I want to point out that whenever they do stuff like that, you have to think of what they said in wrestling. Card subject to change.
Yeah.
And I believe that was it. The Marvelverse books, these are the books that are being made for the Scholastic. So they reprint stories that kind of highlight recent stories with these characters. So if they're smaller than regular size, they're 6x9, which is a little bigger than digest. So if you want to see what Loki's been up to, they did the story where Spider-Man owed Loki a favor. They reprint that story and a few others. And then Shang-Chi is the Shang-Chi stories that, And that's it for Marvel. Boy, they're reprinting tons of omnibuses, by the way. So if you have missed out on any omnibuses, you're going to want to check that because they're going back to press. And I would like to point out why that is, Joe.
Which is?
The new numbers came out. The top 10 books for amount of dollars. You know, these books sold the most, but these books made the most money. They were all omnibuses and masterworks from Marvel. They ran the top 10. You want to know why they're doing it?
They ran the table, yep.
That's why they're doing it, kids. Because I'm always like, why are they reprinting this stuff? It's sitting in dollar bins for the masterworks, and then it's like, oh, yeah, it was the fifth biggest. It made more money than almost everything else that Marvel put out. That's why they're doing it.
And the big thing, and this is secondary to what Marvel's worried about, because I've watched the people online. They're ruining the values of the omnibus. Folks, that's not their job. They don't care what the value of an omnibus is. If they can sell more, they're going to sell more. So if you're investing in omnibuses, don't. Matter of fact, I think we have something coming up about investing in comics, don't we, Corey?
Yes, you may want to listen to our 500th episode about that.
Yeah, maybe. So we'll tell you how to do it. I will point out, though, that there's been a couple omnibuses that you've talked about, Corey, the ones where they're reprinting all the comics in that particular year or that month or whatever.
Yeah, just the one.
That I can't see that ever being reprinted. And then there was aforementioned, was it a Kirby Romance one?
Yeah, that one's never getting reprinted.
Yeah, I mean, so there are some
Romance and War.
Yeah, there are some that might hold their value, but don't count on it because if that one shot up to $1 billion and the demand was there, Marvel would probably reprint it. So buyer beware on that stuff. That's some dynamite information there, right, Corey?
Why, yes, it is. And our next book is our next publisher is Dynamite.
I've got a couple actually in Dynamite that I'm looking at. Usually Dynamite, it's so attuned to Red Sonja, Vampirella, and the 3 trillion variant covers. On page 155 is a trade paperback called Myopia. A homeless man is mysteriously abducted. A journal is left on the edge of a subway platform, filled with stories about a world that doesn't exist. Not far from here, a scientist is murdered in cold blood. The only clues are his burned-down lab, a magnetically propelled motorcycle, and a man walking around New York City with the last living Falcon on the planet. Imagine a world where your every thought, your every move is filtered through the Central Lens Network. Now imagine being a 12-year-old boy and discovering a pair of lenses that allow you access to this network undetected. That's what happens to Matthew Glenn the day his father is murdered. 2 years later, mysteriously appears back in his life. A couple pages of preview art, and it sounds intriguing. This is some science fiction here, so I'm definitely looking forward to picking up this one. Anything else for you?
There is only one thing at Dynamite for me. One of the movies that I love that was basically, it feels like it was dropped in theaters and then didn't even make a splash when it was dropped and went away, is Sky Captain and the World of Tomorrow. For some reason, they are putting out a book, The Art of Sky Captain and the World of Tomorrow. I can't see this as being something that sells really well, but it's going to be a nice, thick hardcover with the art design and the layout and all of the planning and art that they did for that movie. It was, I believe, the first movie shot fully where all the backgrounds and everything were CGI. It was basically shot in a warehouse. Totally green screened. Everything was CGI. And I love that movie. So getting more information about how it was made is something I'm looking forward to. Can I recommend it? Not if you're not a fan of the movie. But it's fascinating that they're putting it out because the movie was 20 years ago. Was not a hit. Lost tons of money. But hey, here you go. Maybe they're publishing it just for me.
Death to the Army of Darkness. Trade paperback, that is. So if you're an Army of Darkness fan, you didn't get the Death to the Army of Darkness miniseries, here's your chance, page 160. That's pretty much it for me with Dynamite.
Next is Boom, and they're putting out a book that I'm not buying, but I want to point out, because I think they're making a massive mistake.
Uh-oh.
Joe, go to page 170.
All right, let's see page 170. Page 170. Uh-oh.
Joe, do you remember when you got the Magic comics?
I do.
Why did people buy them?
Well, they had a unique Magic card inside it that you could only get from that various issue, and they were all polybagged. Later on, they had actual packs of Magic, although it was Fallen Empire, which was not one of the... what the prices are going for now, it really wasn't well received when it first came out. And so here we are. You got Magic, and what's it coming with?
No card.
Derp.
And it's $4.99.
Double derp.
If you're going to put out a Magic comic, you better have a card in there, or Magic fans... I'm gonna make a generalization. They don't give a shit about the world and the world building and the characters. They play the game.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to be fun with it, you know, have a rare card in there, because then, you know, you're gonna sell. This would probably become a number one in terms of single issue. If you just want to have some fun making an exclusive card, even if it's just a land, you know, just exclusive art. Or better yet, you got some, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, not counting the blank cover, you know, put some of those characters in there. But, whatever.
Yeah. If you're going to do a Magic comic and you don't have a Magic card, why did you buy the license?
Yeah.
That was it that I wanted to point out with Boom. A huge missed opportunity there.
Swing on and miss.
There is another one on page 173. It's a limited collector set of the Magic number one covers. Again, no card.
No. If I had the money, I'd buy some of those cover books just because the art is usually pretty fun to look at. But I'm on limited funds. So. But now, we get to the rest. Same thing as always, go round robin.
Sure.
All right. I will start off on page 197 under Abrams Comic Arts, A Fire Story by Brian Fries. Early morning, Monday, October 9th, 2017, wildfires burned through Northern California, 44 deaths. In addition, over 6,000 homes, 8,000 other structures were destroyed. Brian Fries gives a firsthand account of this tragic event. It's honest, unflinching. It's his personal experiences, including losing his house and every possession he had, that his wife and him couldn't fit into the back of their car as they fled. There's a soft cover. There's a hard cover. Pick your choice. Little slice of life. I don't know. Maybe it's because my dad's a firefighter, or was a firefighter. I'm interested in this. Pray to God I'm never caught up in a situation like that. But I'm interested to see what happened with him.
Couple pages before that on 194, New Cimmerian miniseries, which is basically Conan adapting the public domain stories so they can't call him Conan. Iron Shadows in the Moon, another adaptation, and the gimmick is that they're able to adapt it and put all the sex back in.
Sex.
I've liked these, but you're not going to beat John Buscema and Barry Windsor Smith's art, so I prefer the Marvel version. But if you're a Conan fan, I do like them. They are well done. It's not a new story. If you're a Conan fan, you've read the story, you've read Marvel's adaptation, you know that stuff. There is another Goon omnibus. I like that he calls his omnibuses a bunch of old crap. Goon is a series by Eric Powell, and they were printed over at Dark Horse. They're just this fun, odd mix of monsters and goofiness. And if you haven't read it, pick up the first volume, the first omnibus. He is still doing stories kind of infrequently, but I do like the fact that he's putting them out, basically publishing this stuff on his own, because he was at Dark Horse, built up a following, and used it to create his own tiny little publishing company. Joe?
On page 202 in Aftershock Comics, Project Patron. 30 years ago, the world watched in horror as the Patron, a hero sent as humanitarian aid from a different dimension, went punch for punch with Woe, a primordial beast and a perfect match for our mighty protector. In the end, both hero and villain alike fell. But Patron returned and continues to defend us to this day. At least that's what we've all been told. Truth is, the Patron died that day along with Woe. The UN replaced him with a Reploid, designed to mimic the real Patron and continue on his mission of protection. Today, Patron Reploid is secretly piloted by an elite team, a team prepared for anything except for the death of one of their own. Looks like a couple of very, very small pages of art shown, but this one's got a little oomph to it. I think I'll give it a shot. Regular cover. There's an incentive cover, so check with your retailer if you're so interested. Corey?
Back on page 224, Archie still has no new books. But they're doing another one of their trade paperbacks where they reprint an entire series, you know, everything. She's Josie. Yes, it's Josie from before Josie and the Pussycats, where it was Dan DiCarlo created this character and was based on his wife, I believe. So these are the stuff from the 60s before it was Josie and the Pussycats has not been reprinted that I can think of ever, because once it became Josie and the Pussycats, that's all you saw. So these are they're Archie books, but they're a little different because there's a female and there's not a love triangle. Looking forward to these because, you know, Dan DiCarlo. Come on, man.
It's Dan DiCarlo. One page back on page 223 under Andrews McNeil, Fangs hardcover, a love story between a vampire and a werewolf. Take my money. This is based, Sarah Anderson did it based on Sarah Scribble comics. Elsie's a vampire, 300 years old, but in all that time, she's never met her match. All this changes one night in the bar when she meets Jimmy, a charming werewolf with a wry sense of humor. I'm going to buy this, and I'm going to give it to my brother-in-law, who's big on werewolf stuff. I'm pretty sure he'll never see this coming. So I'll have – it's basically – that's a new category, buy and give away. How about that? But I'm looking forward to that. That one caught my eye. And you know usually when I'm reading this stuff and I see, it's a vampire, look, I'm out of here. But with a werewolf and a love story. Maybe it's just because it's Valentine's Day, but I'll give you my $14.99 for that.
And you, of course, have watched all of the Underworld movies, which is about a vampire in love with a werewolf, except the vampire is Kate Beckinsale in tight leather.
Not a single episode.
Well, it's movies, and now that I've said it's Kate Beckinsale in tight leather. On page 249, we highlight every book from Craig Yeo. Normally, his books come out through IDW, but not this one. This is also not a reprint. This is Teaching Artfully by Megan Parker, which chronicles her experiences as a new art teacher at a public high school. Megan Parker's debut and insightful graphic novel, Teaching Artfully, captivates, inspires, and motivates the reader, all with endearing humor. It's a Yeo book. Craig Yeo. His reprints blow me away. I think this is the first thing he has packaged that's all new. So I will let him know that, hey, thank you for putting out another Yeo book, and I'm going to be buying it.
You promised me darkness on page 239.
I promised to buy donuts that weren't terrible like the ones you get.
No. I got terrible donuts. Only on road trips. You Promise Me Darkness. Approximately every 75 years, Halley's Comet orbits around the sun, and every time this happens, people around the world are born with incredible abilities, special auroras that grant them supernatural skills, but they can also be a curse. Yuko and Sebastian, two siblings with special auroras, are constantly running from an evil being known as the Anti-Everything, who feeds on these and gets stronger with each intake. You got 6 different covers. One of them is a nude limited cover. Oh my. Just the covers to go for. I have no idea if this is a series, a one shot, but it looks intriguing enough, and I will give it a shot.
Fantagraphics wants more of my money, by the way.
Of course. We all want your money. We just they put out comics to get it.
On page 260 is another of the Basil Wolverton books. This is Scoop Scuttle and His Pals. Basil Wolverton. All I need to do is Lena the Hyena. He's the one who drew that character back for Lil Abner, and most people will know who it is. He drew very odd, very idiosyncratic books. He also did covers for Plop until he passed away. This reprints his humor stuff from the 40s, such as Scoop Scuttle, Mystic Moon, Bang Bang Buster, and Jumpin' Jupiter. But on the next page is a book that is, I don't know if I would call it famous or infamous, but it is In Pictopia, which was written by Alan Moore, drawn by Don Simpson, was printed as a kind of a fundraiser for Fantagraphics, and everybody involved said it was some of their best work. It's been out of print for ages. It's a 28-page book, but it's Don Simpson, Alan Moore. There was also Pete Pavlovsky, Eric Vincent, presented here for the first time from the Scanned Art. Pictopia is an allegorical city inhabited by the old, forgotten, but once famous and iconic comics characters, now considered pitiable has-beens as popular new comic characters who are cheerfully and inevitably taking their place in the pop culture pantheon of celebrity. It is both a paean to the timeless, beloved comic characters and a scathing critique of the then-contemporary comic scene. They do not list Alan Moore as a writer because it's Alan Moore and he just wants to be listed as the writer.
Which is all right.
It's $20 for a 28-page book. So this is not something that you're going to pick up if it, oh, I hear this is good. This is something you're going to pick up if you're like me and it's been, I missed out on it because it sold out and they haven't ever reprinted it. Ooh, it's legendary in how just vicious Moore was. And Dom Simpson, not exactly one of the nicest guys when it comes to what he thought of mainstream comics either. Although it's interesting that he has now had a comic in Marvel. So, there you go. I want to point that out. I am picking it up. I don't recommend it unless you're someone who's been looking for it. I believe the last time I saw it at a shop, it was at Dreamhaven, and Greg Ketter, damn handsome man, had it for over $250.
Yeah, there's not even one on the eBays. I'm just kind of scanning to see if I can find a price on it. So I'm going to jump you back to page 255. I've talked about this book in the past. Here's your chance to get it. Wimbledon Green, the story from the sketchbook of the cartoonist Seth. Wimbledon Green, of course, is the greatest comic book collector in the world. It's a great book. A little book for $20. Lots of fun. I don't know where my copy went. I think I borrowed it to somebody, but definitely pick it up if you got the funds. It might even be sitting in a better comic store now as we speak. So you may be reading this mere minutes from finishing this here podcast with us.
Absolutely love that book. I got the hardcover. Seth is one of my favorite cartoonists. I recently got the 2-volume slipcased Clyde Fans, which is simply a story of a family-owned fan company in Canada and how it slowly went out of business and how that affected the family. And you're thinking, wow, that sounds dull and boring. Seth is able to make the dull and boring fascinating and interesting because of his art and how he tells the stories through art. The one to pick up, one of my favorite books of all time, is It's a Good Life If You Don't Weaken, which people at the time thought was nonfiction. It is about a cartoonist named Seth who is obsessed with an artist from the 50s who sold 3 comics to the New Yorker. And him tracking down the artist, how this artist got into drawing, what happened afterward, and his family. And you read it, and it's such good fiction. Not good comics, good fiction, that it will blow you away and kind of stay with you for years. Clyde Fans is the same way. It's just so well done. Seth always has this feeling of melancholy to his art, which is why I think they picked him to draw the covers and design the covers for the Peanuts library that Fantagraphics did. It's that same sort of, there was always kind of this melancholy through Charles Schulz's work. Yes, he had the joke every day, but it wasn't like everybody in the strip was happy. So it's that same sort of feel. Let's see. What do I have next? Boy, there's a whole lot of here that I'm skipping over.
Yeah.
But nope, that's the Kenzerko stuff. Knights of the Dinner Table, they are resoliciting a bunch of the issues because they're running like 6 months late.
Yeah. On page 263, I'm going to point out another one. I have a copy of it, but Bernie Wrightson's Frankenstein's being offered again.
Oh, yes.
Hard cover, soft cover. Plus, it also includes introductions by Stephen King, author Mary Shelley. Just fascinating. I mean, Bernie Wrightson, premier artist. You don't know who he is, but you obviously are new to the podcast. Welcome. But yeah, if you don't have a copy of this, like Wimbledon Green, this is definitely your chance to pick up one and get up with the rest of us.
They also are doing a Kickstarter for, you know, that one beautiful Frankenstein drawing he did. That's the cover. They are doing a Kickstarter to make a jigsaw puzzle out of that. So if you're into jigsaw puzzles, you may want to head over to that. On page 296, they are resoliciting Asterix Omnibus Volume 4. Asterix is the best-selling comic in the world. It is a French comic set in Rome, and Asterix basically wanders the world in search of adventure. It's what's the name here? Rene Goscinny. The first two have come out. It's a huge success in the rest of the world, to the point where when a new volume comes out, it sells millions of copies through Europe, and it's just now coming to the U.S. It's excellent, excellent stuff.
I'm hyped up because I just got volume one. I didn't do all four at once. I figured I'll just pick up one, and I'm going to have to play some catch up here. Page 303, under Second Sight Publishing, Freak Show Night, number one. During his time in prison, Red was surrounded by the worst types of people, thieves, rapists, murderers. Now on the outside, he's surrounded by the living dead. Armed with only the only thing he's ever known, violence, Red finds one last chance at redemption for a lifetime of sin. Five-issue miniseries. I read through all the stuff. This one caught my eye. I think I'll give it a shot.
And then on page 316, this is the last thing that I have. They're doing a reprinting of American Comic Book Chronicles, the 50s. So Bill Shelley, who I'm not going to say he was a close friend, but we were very friendly. I did an interview with him for his autobiography. We traded emails, passed away a few years ago. He wrote this volume, goes in depth on not just the comics at the time, but also one of the best writings of what happened during the comic book scare of the 50s, where the government actually went after crime and horror comics. And I've read all sorts of things about it. Bill Shelley breaks it down and explains it in a way with, if you want to get more detail, there are certainly more books and magazines and interviews and stuff. But he does it in such a way that you understand what the social forces were at the time and what was going on in publishing at the time and how basically the code wrapped up with the distribution, wrapped up with television, nearly destroyed comic books forever, and how coming out of it, you know, when the 50s started, there was a huge sales boom in the early 50s, and there were literally over 100 companies publishing comics. By the time you got to 1956, you were down to less than 10. And he goes through and explains why and how that happened. Even if you're not into the Comic Book Chronicles, the way it gives that information is something. And I was recently talking with someone about comics, and it was one of those groups on Facebook where they said, well, in the 70s, all these detective and cop shows were big. Anytime something was big on TV, it was big in comics too. Why didn't that boom come to comics? And I had to talk about how publishers were so scared of doing crime comics that even detective comics weren't done. They stayed all away from that because they didn't want anything to even look like a crime comic because they were scared of the Eye of Sauron. They're doing crime comics again. They must be destroyed.
Destroy.
So, really good book, really well written. Bill Shelley was a wonderful, wonderful guy. Please go back and listen to the interview I did with him about his autobiography. Just a fascinating person, very important to comic fandom, and he's done so many good books about comics history. I miss hearing from him. I miss hearing about what he's working on. Joe, what do you got next?
Page 314, just pointing it out for you Michael Moorcock, Elric fans, Titans doing Elric Stormbringer hardcover with Pete Craig Russell writing and doing the art.
Reprinting the first miniseries they did.
Yeah, good stuff. If you've never seen it, if you're a fan of Michael Moorcock, Elric, Pete Craig Russell.
Our
recommendations. Yeah, this is a good one to pick up. It's a hardcover, and it's one of those books and series that I absolutely love. I'm pretty sure I don't have the originals anymore, so I will probably be picking this up just to add to my collection. I got nothing else comic-wise. How about you, Mr. Strode?
I got nothing else at all.
All right, flip that book over, because we're going into the toys quickly. Just a couple things to point out. On page 13, if you're a fan of Invader Zim, here comes some more Invader Zim collector toys. I think the one I'm definitely picking up, of course, is Zim with Gurr, just because I love a good Gurr robot. But on page 37, something I need to know if Corey's going to pick up. And when he sees it, he'll know what I'm talking about.
What page is that again?
Page 37 in the toy side.
The Iron Giant the Bolt soft vinyl replica?
I know you love your soft vinyl replicas, but no, that's not what I was looking at. Straight above.
Ah, the MODOK's. Yeah, that's too much for a figure.
Yeah, and this is part of the Legends line, so you may luck out and find it for less at Target or not. Because usually they're so, I mean, this is what I talk about when I blame McFarlane, because he made toys so detailed and so crazy that everybody's followed through. You don't get the little tiny figure for $5 to $10. No, you're getting some serious collectability. For $50, if I found one of these, I wouldn't open it. I'd just put it on a shelf for 10 years.
And isn't this one of those where if you bought all six figures in a line, you would get a part of it and you would put it together for this?
This is MODOK in and of himself.
Because it says collect all the figures.
So if you didn't want to pick up the figures themselves, this is one way that you can do it, which means they probably had a bunch of extra spare parts around and they're just packaging it. I point this out because one of our buds, Dan Wiesemeyer, who we've talked about because not only a fantastic artist, but he had that hardcover come out about the animation of the X-Men animated series. But he has been picking up toys and comic sets from when we owned a comic shop. He was part of Hot Comics West, and I was Hot Comics East. And I remarked, I said, you know, it's amazing. You're buying stuff that we sold at the shop. And he's like, yeah, I got to get this stuff before it starts going crazy, before people realize all those toys from the Batman movies are 20, 30 years old, and they're not getting cheaper, and they're getting harder to find. And it's just a delight because he practiced. It's like, dude, how can a toy I had now be vintage? I'm old.
Well, I remember back at your shop, we used to talk about how it was a 25-year timeline.
Yeah.
And somebody on Facebook actually posted a meme about this recently where it said, when poor kids hit their 40s, they want to buy all the toys they couldn't get when they were a kid. And for me, I learned early on with comics because I would watch, oh, wow, all the 70s books are starting to go up in value. Oh, look, some of the 80s books are going up in value. And it wouldn't be, you know, the Spider-Man and stuff that had already gone up. No, it would be the cheese. Mm-hmm. You know, the Gunsmoke Westerns, the Dead of Nights, that. Because it was people who finally, all right, I've raised my kids. I have some extra spending money. You know, I'd like to get this. I'd like to pick up that series that I couldn't afford when I was a kid. Or I'd like to pick up those comics that I sold when I was, you know, in college in order to pay for books and stuff. People want to go back and get the stuff when they were a kid. So now you've got all the kids who grew up with the Batman movie and the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and the first X-Men toys and everything. They're now in their 40s going, remember when I had... Boom. And it's that way for comics. You can actually look and see not as much as it used to be. It used to be almost a 25-year timeline. Now, because, you know, you could get so much digitally, it's not there anymore. But there is that, remember when I had... Here, I thought you were going to make a horrible joke about the Iron Giant Bolt soft vinyl replica because it looks like a... You know who doesn't have to worry about nostalgia, Joe?
Or giant size soft vinyl replicas.
These guys, our sponsors. Believe it or not, kids, this here podcast has sponsors. And that sponsor, since day one, is DreamHost.com. DreamHost.com is the best, bar none, web host in the whole known universe. And if you need a website, head on over to DreamHost.com, put in code CRAZY, that's K-R-A-Y-Z, and get $20 off your first year. Now, if you would like to advertise here on any of the Solitaire Rose Network podcasts, you can just email me at SolitaireRoseNetwork@gmail.com, subject advertising. Also, head on over to eBay and look for user Crazy, K-R-A-Y-Z, that's Joe Crazy Writer, who's always telling us about the eBay in every episode of Crazy Comics and Stories. If you would like to contact us, you can do so. You can give us a call at 952-856-0519. Leave a message and we'll play it on the show. Or you can send us an email at solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com. Thanks. And this isn't the only podcast I do. Oh,
hell no.
How could I allow myself to have any spare time when I'm doing things like this? The Solitaire Rose Radio Network is currently on a pause. Basically because COVID-19 has made it so that I have to work a lot of extra hours at both jobs. But you can still go and listen to my other podcasts. Now, you're probably listening to Crazy Comics and Stories, which is the main podcast. But on this same feed, K-R-A-Y-Z-C-O-M-I-X, is Solitaire Rose Radio, the solo radio podcast that I do. I've done interviews, I've done short stories, I've done all sorts of things, and you can get to it right here on this same feed. I also do a podcast called Novelcast, where I take the novels I've written and turn them into free audiobooks. That's over at novels.solitairerose.com. Dangerous Dan Moore and I, and of course Wolfie B. Bad, give you bad advice over at badadvice.solitairerose.com. You send in your questions, and we give you the aforementioned bad advice. And then myself and Adam Vermillion from For the Love of Comics do the Fantastic Forecast at fantasticforecast.solitairerose.com, where we go through the issues of the Fantastic Four, four issues at a time, to give the plot and commentary on each issue. That's not all. Yes, I'm crazy. I still, over at PWInsiderElite.com, every week on Wednesday, do a recap of the latest episode of AEW Dynamite. I write up what happened, and then myself and Anthony Pyrus will do an audio. Now, you can only listen to the audio if you're a member at PWInsiderElite.com, and if you're a wrestling fan, you should be. Where we then break down the episode, talk about what we liked, what we didn't like, give it a grade and let you know if you should have watched that episode. Those are the other podcasts here at the Solitaire Rose Radio Network. Thanks. And now we get to Joe's favorite part of the show. No, 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 not where he goes onto websites looking for people using the Iron Giant, the Bolt Soft Final replica. No, it's Joe. What's going on the eBays?
Oh, lots of stuff. It's been a couple weeks since we've actually done a real podcast because we had that false fill-in episode, and I'll talk about that. I was gonna go up north, you know, and it was all my birthday and all that, but we'll get to that because we got freaking and geeking coming. No, just different stuff. And of course, what's our secondary mission, Corey?
To mention every comic book ever printed.
And let's do some of that. For example, and these are all things that I've sold, so don't be looking on my eBay page for them. You had your chance. Red Circle Sorcery number 11 from Fawcett. This is the line that
nope. Hold on. It was distributed by Fawcett. It was from Archie.
Under the Red Circle line, because the title was originally Chilling Adventures in Sorcery for First Five and then became Red Circle Sorcery. No idea what the stories were like in it because I just bought it because the covers were really, really cool. Ended up with a couple duplicates, so I just blew them out. Corey knows this one. Marvel Adventure featuring
Daredevil.
Yep. One of them reprint books that Marvel would kill everybody for. Initially, it was Marvel Adventures for 1 and 2 and then just became Marvel Adventures, starting with Daredevil number 22. Only ran 6 issues, so pretty easy run to pick up if you can find it in good shape. I had a number 1. Had. Swamp Thing number 49 from the Alan Moore run. This one's got a little heat on it because it's the first Nuklon who, I think it was what, Infinity? What was the series? Infinity Inc. He shows up. And
yes.
It's also considered the first Justice League Dark because this was kind of a tie-in to Crisis, although it didn't have the Crisis border on it. And it's Alan Moore with Stan Walk and Alfred Alcala art. And it's got some heat, so pick it up. From our friends at Rock and Roll Comics, Revolutionary Comics, The Beatles Experience. I had a few of the issues. I think it was, a 7-issue black and white unauthorized series. They did a whole series of legends like this. What's happening are the people who are interested in the Beatles are starting to wake up and realize, hey, I didn't know this was published. Because if it was published, it probably wasn't carried by a comic shop because it was kind of direct to begin with. But it's got Beatles on it.
You know why else people may want to pick up that book?
The Beatle Experience or just the whole line?
The whole line, but the Beatle Experience. There is a documentary on Amazon about Rock and Roll Comics.
Oh, maybe that's what's getting some heat behind them. So people are reading. Because, I've had these. I picked up a whole bunch of different sets and pieced together a set for myself. And then I'm just selling off the extras. And they've been sitting there for a while. You know, I'm the cheapest price on eBay. I'm not going expensive. And all of a sudden, in the course of a couple of weeks, I think I've sold everything except the number one. So the other thing I sold was a book called Whaler's Bay, which was by creator J.B. Orbitz from 2008. I must have met him at the MCBA con because I got not only his comic signed, but I had the Falcon Ashcan edition signed. And I priced it well. It disappeared real quick. Corey, have you heard of Multiple Warheads from different publishers, really? Oni published it. It was a humorous science fiction series by Brandon Graham. Sexica is an organ smuggler in a post-apocalyptic world carrying fantastic body parts such as the stomach that converts waste into golds. They're going across snowy wastes in the walled cities, where she lives with her werewolf boyfriend. The issue I sold was from Image called Downfall. And you can find them. They're around. Pick them up. This is one of those books I picked up just because as I go through on our geeking days, I just see a thick book for a buck. I'll pick it up and give it a shot. Speaking of thick books for a buck, a good copy of Superman's pal, Jimmy Olsen, 122 from 1969. This is one of those where he's looking through his little black book and he talks about Ilona, the girl who turned him into a freak. Miss Jisplix, I can't remember. It's the wife of Mitsuplex. Turned him into a giant porcupine. And of course, because of Lucy Lane, he became a Wolfman. And of course, the finale is the heavy crush because he had Elsie, who had a 308-pound crush on him. Ah, the good old 60s. Chronicles of Wormwood. I had, we talk about picking up stuff from Avatar, and I apparently had multiple copies of the hardcover. So I blew them out. This was, of course, Garth Ennis's stuff. He wrote it. Jason Burroughs did the art. And I haven't read it yet, so I have no idea what it is. All I knew is because of the cheap deals that Avatar was doing, I ended up with a couple extra copies. Corey, do you remember a book from Marvel called A-Next?
Yes.
Yep. It's,
it was set in the Spider-Girl universe, which was a future where Peter Parker's and Mary Jane's daughter grew up rather than being whisked away to Europe, never to be spoken of ever again. So it was set like 20 years in the future where the Marvel heroes' kids are taking over by Tom DeFalco.
And do you know how well received it was?
Spider-Girl lasted a long time, but none of the other books did.
No, this one was canceled after 12 issues. However, issue number 4 has got heat on it because of first appearances, kind of like a future Avengers. First appearance of American Dream, Blue Streak, Coal Tiger, Crimson Curse, Freebooter. I have no idea who these people are, but their first appearances. And, you know, we're talking Investment Comics. First appearances go crazy. I mean, just like we talked about the Daredevil, was it 25 earlier? So for some reason, I had an A-Next number 4. Not anymore. Corey, do you like candy? I ain't talking about sweet confectionery. I'm talking about the 1955 series from comic magazines. It's one of those teen girl comics. Candy defined the norms, whereas most characters in the comics, such as the aforementioned Marvel's Patsy Walker, were gentle, generous. Candy O'Connor was brash, sassy, used to getting her way. Her boyfriend, Ted Dawson, went on to star in Cheers later, had more in common with Archie than with the best man on campus type so prized in teenage romance comics. Her only rival, Cornelia Clyde, played true to type, a spoiled rich girl who tried to spoil Candy's life through guile and expenditure on her oversized allowance. I found a copy at a thrift store when I was out geeking with my daughter and her friends. The sad thing was is they put all their stickers right on the comic books. And instead of making it like a very good copy, it made it a fair to good copy. But these things are not easy to find. And I bought it anyways. I put it up on eBay's. I also found a copy of Jughead Comics from 1955. Same thing. It just had it slapped on. Had the sticker not been there, I probably could have given it a higher grade. But these books just are not easy to find in any grade. And I put them up, and about 4 hours later, they sold. It's kind of like, whoa, what the heck? I should have priced them higher. No, I price things fair when I'm doing the eBays. That's why I sold a copy of Justice League of America, Volume 1, 1957. Other than Supergirl in it, Corey, do you remember? Let's ask the Strode. Hang on a second. I got to get my dime out. All right. Well, this is a little tarnished. There, rub it up. There, for this slightly shiny dime, Corey, what was significant about Justice League of America 157 in from 1978?
I don't know the Justice League all that well.
I could say one thing you might remember.
Okay.
It was a wedding.
Was it the wedding of the Atom?
It is. And for some reason, it was one of those where Adam didn't have his own book, but there was a whole run of books where he was engaged, and then this is the one where he actually got married. It's a classic boy versus girl because Siren's there and has all the guys attacking Supergirl, Black Canary, Wonder Woman, and of course, somewhere in all the mayhem and mischief, there's an actual wedding. I have copies of this, obviously, because I like to collect the real Supergirl. None of these fake ones. Kara, come back. Corey, do you remember a series called Frankenstein Alive? Alive.
Vaguely. I think it was based on a Dean Koontz novel.
Yeah. It's from IDW, it was published 2012, 2014, 2018. This is basically Bernie Wrightson and Steve Niles coming back to the Frankenstein that we talked about. And the books are insanely expensive, at least the first printings are. So, and there's a lot of different variants. And so if you can find them, check them out. There is a deluxe cover set and other collector sets that you can buy so you don't have to go deep into debt. But I had a variant cover. Don't know where it came from. Off to somebody else. Now, we talked earlier about Shazam hardcover and whether it was worth, what are they asking, $50?
Yeah.
Something like that. Well, here, this is one of those stories where you, had you been paying attention, could have gotten a tremendous deal from me. Because apparently now with all the Batman hype, do we want to call it Batmania? I don't know. World's Finest number 255 has the original Batman. Who is the original Batman? Why is he the only one that can save Superman and Batman from some swamp thing? No idea. Do you know what this comic is going for on the eBays?
I would be scared to ask.
Anywhere from like $20 to $100. I have no idea if this Batman is tied into anything, if it's just one of the multiverse Batmans. Corey, fathom a guess how much I sold mine for.
$39.99.
Nope. $5 with $3.99 shipping. Why? Well, because I priced it out and I never went back. And I rarely go back. I mean, and I'm not the type to, oh, I got rooked. No, I don't know where I bought this thing. I probably got it for a quarter out of a box and I've just been selling it off. But somebody got a good deal. I think. I don't know. I've since seen them for $10. But yeah, you don't know what's going up in price. Maybe this one's got some heat on it. Maybe it's just an albatross. But I rarely go back and reprice my stuff. Sometimes I price down because, you know, especially in case of variant covers, the prices will drop. Sometimes I should have probably priced it more, like when I sold off all my Plastic Man archives for $50 to $70 a piece, long out of print and going for silly, silly money. Either way, you, as a beloved listener to this here show, you can go right to my site, Crazy, K-R-A-Y-Z. You see something you like and I didn't price it right, just buy it. My own fault. See something expensive? You want to cut a deal? Just send me an email via Facebook. You know the drill. I'll take care of you. I'll give you a good deal if I can. I'll include a couple extra fun things. And there's only one thing left to say. Come get some.
And now we get to my favorite part of the show. No. No, not where I planned my trip tomorrow, because today's Valentine's Day, so tomorrow is half-price candy day.
Oh, yeah. And the temperature's up. It's 9 below right now.
No, it's freaking and geeking. Joe, what are you freaking on?
Well, I want you to quickly dwell. I could use a few jelly beans. I do want to say I got a nice note from one of our listeners, Travis. He just sent a thing saying that he wanted a page of since I made a copy of that haunted vagina page from Tarot Rose, and I actually took a copy of it and sent it to Corey. He sent me a hot tip. He said if you visit Global News up in Superior, Wisconsin, on my trip up north, he said the owner has a few long boxes on the floor in the record album area, 12 comics for $5. Travis went up, took what he wanted. He said plenty of Bad Girl comics, She, things like that.
Was he able to get the Haunted Vagina issue of Tarot?
I don't know, but I did send him a copy of it, and he kind of laughed. He said, funny page. I'm surprised at the newer looking art. He thought it was out of a 70 or 80 page comic, the way we talked about it.
No, Jim Ballant is still doing that book. He still puts out issues. He makes a great living off that one book and going to conventions and selling sketches of Batman and Catwoman.
Yeah, and I would get a course of
Supergirl. He makes a living just doing that.
I know. That is so brilliant. And again, you know, you may not be big on the TNA type covers, but the horror stories were pretty good. I mean, I remember reading the one that we always laugh about, and I was like, wow, this is an amazing story. So if you're a horror fan, you may want to delve out and check some of this out. It's always nice to get a little email from somebody. I will give an update on my health. I don't have my meds right. So even like today, my hands are, I don't know if it's because of high pressure and super cold or super cold and high pressure, but I'm really achy today, but not like I was to the point where I couldn't move. We did not go up north because unfortunately my wife slipped, fell on the ice and really whacked the heck out of her back. She's feeling the same type of pain I was feeling, not all over the body, but just in the back where everything she tries doing hurts. Whether she sits up, lays down, tries to walk. We decided just it wasn't worth traveling at that time because we wanted to get the hell out of town just to escape, and we knew it was going to be cold. We didn't think it'd be 50 below zero cold, but we just thought, no, just save it for another day. The place we go to, we've been to dozens of times, Cove Point up on the North Shore. They're very gracious, gave us a full refund. And, of course, we're just going to reschedule and go up there some other time. She's still hurting. You know, my hands are kind of cranky. But other than that, my health is a little bit better. I mean, I'm feeling a little bit better. You can listen to the podcast when I was down compared to now. You got a spring in my voice, even though I'm not wearing pants. Another thing I'm freaking on, and, Corey, I don't know if this has happened with you. Oh, sweet bejesus. Something's either going on with Diamond Comics or going on with Discount Comic Service, but I have got a whole list of comics that they've been shorted and not getting replacements on, which annoys the living fuck out of me because they're all independent books. And, of course, by the time they tell me there's a shortage, I'm like, am I going to be able to run to the source or run to Hot Comics and pick them up? You know, I've got plenty of books in my collection and runs. Like, I'm trying to finish up Shame and Tears. I'm missing issue number 2, and now I find out I'm missing issue number 12. This is from the 1980s. This is Mike Grell's book that he did. No,
nope,
I'm sorry.
The
90s, because this is part this what he did
Image.
With Image. And, of course, it's Mike Grell, so I picked it up. And, of course, he had John Sable team up, which was amazing. And, you know, I just want to sit down and read it, decide if it's going to stay in my collection or not. I'm missing 2 issues. I did find one, but now for all this new independent stuff, and I've already run to the source once with my list, and if they had it, they only bought a few issues of it, if they bought it at all. And it's just pissing me off that, oh, yeah, we're short. I mean, I get a refund, big effing deal. I want the damn book. You know, and all this is, of course, because of the COVID. We stopped publishing. All the books predate that whole weird era last year where, you know, things weren't being published and things were canceled. You know, there's been a few books where I saw, okay, here's an issue number 1. It's from Heavy Metal and it's all the way back from August of last year, but I don't recall issues 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6 being solicited. Do I want to waste my money buying issue number 1? Because if they do resolicit, I'm not getting it because I was shorted. But I don't want to get it if they're not going to publish the other 5. But if they do resolicit, there's no way in hell I'm going to go back and find that sole copy. It just pisses me off, you know. And I love supporting the independents, but man, I am getting rooked. Again, if you run across this, are you getting screwed like that, or is it just because I'm ordering so many independents?
I'm getting stuff canceled. But I've transitioned mostly to trade paperbacks, so I'm not getting a lot of that, especially miniseries. Miniseries I just don't buy as comics anymore. I don't sell my stuff on eBay, so it's, nope. I have too many miniseries where I bought a couple issues and then the rest didn't come out. I'm waiting until you're done.
Yeah, and I want to support the independents because I like reading it. I mean, even now I've got a box sitting behind me with just a lot of different miniseries. And what I do is I wait till they're all together and read them. But this is just torquing me off, man. I may have a geek day tomorrow, not only to go for some half price candy, which is what every growing diabetic needs, but just I'll have to take a run to some of the maybe hit the Too Hot comics and see if I can luck out and find these issues. And it'll be a balmy 2 below. So, you know, what the heck? Other than that, that's pretty much it. You know, a little bit better health wise, still kind of creaking. How about you, Corey? What you freaking on?
Joe, it's time for Hanging at the Home.
Ooh.
When I first started working at the group home, remember there were four what they called cottages, which were 12-bed facilities. And one that I didn't work at very often had a woman there. And when I would substitute over there, they would say, you need to be careful because she doesn't like men. What do you mean? She gets very angry at men. So time came. One of the staff went to wake her up. And to make sure that she was woken up without a lot of trouble, first they'd turn on her light. And they'd wait. And usually she would get out of bed and yell and turn her light off. And then they'd turn on her light again. And they'd wait until she no longer would yell and turn the light off. Then they would say, it's time to get up. And they would wait, and, you know, basically it was okay. It took about a half hour. And if it wasn't done right, she would get out of bed and attack somebody because she was mad that somebody woke her up. And usually what she would do, she would come out of her room, and if she saw a guy, she would run at them and try to hit them. To the point where there was one morning where they woke her up and she was mad because she had wet the bed. My bed is wet. My bed is wet. And they, you know, try to get her into the bathroom, and you had to get all the blankets and everything off her bed and make her bed. Because if she went in and her bed didn't have sheets and blankets, she'd throw, you know, but she was in the shower. Something happened that made her mad. So she's screaming at the staff in the bathroom, screaming bloody murder. And the staff who was passing meds was a younger man who's also a pastor. He opened the door to see what's going on. All of a sudden, this client comes out of the bathroom, naked, wet, sees him, runs straight at him, hits him with a football tackle, and then tries to start punching him. His staff are, you know, trying to grab her, and she's, you know, wet and slippery and everything. So, a couple of times she went after me. Now, I'd worked in juvenile justice, so it was, you know, here I am. I'm now working with developmentally disabled, and a couple of times she caught me by surprise, so I didn't know. So I just basically took the punches, and she left me alone after that. Why? Well, I wasn't scared when she lost control. Therefore, she knew I could be trusted. If she would lose control, she would still be safe. So she would be nice to me. But this is how I knew her. And then over the years, she sort of, as she got older, she mellowed down a little bit. She got slower. She is the client who's, when they moved into the new houses, she would just stay in her room and color all the time. She'd come out for meals. She may sit with you and watch TV for a little bit. But whenever I would say on Facebook that, oh, I spent the day coloring, I would actually go into her room and color with her because, you know, I've been around her for 10 years. During the first year, she knew I was safe, so she actually liked it. She would be calm. On overnights, they had an overnight staff, and she loved coloring so much she wouldn't go to bed. She would just stay up and do the coloring until she was just about to pass out. So what you would do to get her to go to bed on those days was, you know, hey, do you want to go to bed? Let's get your pajamas on. Let's get you some. And you'd slowly work her to go to bed. Well, we had an overnight staff who would come in. Why are you up? You're supposed to be in bed by now. And after she did that a couple of times, the next time she did it, I said, I hope you know that when I do overnights, she sleeps. No, she never sleeps. Yeah, that's because you come in, the first thing you do is yell at her, so you get her all ramped up. She no longer trusts you. She's going to stay up all night. And because she's tired, she screams and cries. If you were to come in and just be very calm and quiet, you wouldn't have that problem. You don't know what you're talking about. Okay, enjoy that. Huh. Last year, she got COVID, and she had to go to the hospital. And as with most of our clients who got COVID, she was in the hospital much longer than most people because COVID is a respiratory illness that also attacks the heart. And the clients we work with, because they're developmentally disabled, their immune system is for shit. Most, if not all of them, are on tons of medication for everything. She got COVID, was in the hospital, was on a respirator for a month until she was able to recover. She'd forgotten how to walk. She had forgotten how to talk. Her motor function was bad, so she was in a nursing home for another 5 to 6 months after that. Came back. I'm not in that house very much because now with COVID, they want you in one house all the time, and you only work in another house if they have absolutely no other options. So about a month ago, she was having trouble walking again. She was having trouble sitting up. They took her to the hospital, and what it is, her lungs just have never healed. Her heart has never healed, and now her kidneys are starting to go. So she's back in the house on hospice care. And here's this woman who 10 years ago beat the shit out of a 6'2", 25-year-old. And I don't mean, you know, just, you know, punching him. I mean, Luthes tackled him and was beating the crap out of him. And now she can't get out of bed, and she's slowly passing away. She's on hospice care. I did not know she was on hospice care, so when I came in, seeing her like that was very much a shock. And I spent most of my shift sitting with her, and she can't really color that much, so I would color, and she would tell me what color to pick. Or she doesn't watch TV, so I would look for music that she remembered on the TV, because, you know, with cable, you've got all those music channels. And I make a lot of jokes about what I do with the group home, and there are a lot of fun stories about it. And there are times where, you know, I get paid to sleep. But part of the job is this. And when I first moved to Minnesota, I had my degree in psychology, and the two jobs that would call me for interviews were developmentally disabled group homes and juvenile justice group homes. And I got job offers from both, and I decided to go with juvenile justice because, yo, I'm 23, and when you work with teenagers, if you do your best and they do their best, they get better and they go home. Developmentally disabled adults, this is their home, and they're here for the rest of their life. I've been working with this woman for 11 years. I've helped her through her mother passing at 100. I've dealt with her through all sorts of chaos and problems and taking her to the hospital and the ER. And that's the part of the job that I don't talk about much, but it is a vital part of the job. And it took me a long time to get to the point where I'm okay with that being a part of the job. But it's still very much hard to know that we're reaching the end of her story. Her brother is coming to visit every day, which is wonderful. But that part of the job really affects me. And normally when we do freaking, it's, oh, you know, this company did something shitty or this comic sucked. But there are times when it's part of the job that just really kind of hits hard. And this is one of those weeks where the job really hits hard. Joe, what are you geeking on?
I'm geeking on rewatching Babylon 5, not only because it's fun to rewatch, and I'm catching, I mean, it's been a while since I've watched a lot of this. I'm going through every episode in order, and there's things, you know, I remember, like, yeah, I remember this, but I don't remember that. And what's fun is I finally, after all these years, got my wife to watch it with me. So we're slowly working through. She's following along. She's picking up on the right things. And I'm trying not to be the spoiler where, oh, you got to watch this. This is important later. Or this is going to be a big deal. You know, because I'm seeing everything. Because I've seen it all. especially in that first season where everybody, oh, it's so slow. And I'm like, I was too harsh on it. You know, we were all expecting a Star Trek drama thing. It was just like, okay, well, first, this basically, this is life on the station, you know? And it's a lot better than people give credit for. And it makes me, you know, kind of sad. I'm just trying to get the actor's name who played the commander, Michael. I can't think of his name. I don't want to say his name wrong. Come on, Babylon 5. How can I not? Babylon 5. Come on, Crave 3000. Wake up. There we go. Michael O'Hara. There it is. Cast. Cast credit crew. Dun, dun, dun. Yeah. I've talked about it in the past. It wasn't revealed until Michael passed away. But he had mental illness where he was hearing voices. And there was no way he was going to get treated for it and still act. And Straczynski basically wrote him off the show. Everybody gives the oh, well, he was kind of wooden, so they wanted to bring in Bruce Boxleitner. Which was fun because Bruce brought a whole new different thing to it and it was a lot of fun. But as I watched that first series and the first season, you're always thinking, what if Michael didn't have the mental illness? Now, he told Straczynski this, and when Michael got the help he needed, he said, you can tell anybody. And he said, no, I won't tell anybody till after you died. So the truth came out after he passed away. And the proof is in the pudding because Michael does come back in some of the episodes. And I haven't told my wife that, and I don't want, you know, she's outside the door. I don't want to get, I'm trying not to watch this with spoilers. I'm just trying to watch it through her eyes. She's asking all the right questions. And sometimes when she asks her questions, I just got to outright feign ignorance because it's like, you know, it's like, wait a minute, does this mean this is going to happen? And you're like, I don't remember. So it's kind of fun, you know, and I'm looking forward to it. And sometimes I tell her, you know, I'll say, okay, this episode, you're getting in the front seat of the roller coaster. Because I told her when this thing starts rolling, especially season 3 and 4, I said, it's going to be like you're in a roller coaster. You're just going to keep going and going and going. So it'll be fun. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to it. Plus, there was one minor geeking. There's an episode that I absolutely, absolutely love. You know, between I love a good time travel story. And, of course, Babylon Squared is one of the key episodes. I don't know if you're familiar with Babylon 5 or if you want me to spoil it. Or if you've never watched it, tune out for a few minutes because I don't want to spoil it. But in the episode, okay, it's Babylon 5. The first three Babylon stations were sabotaged. The fourth one disappeared. On Babylon Square, it suddenly appears. So they go out and they discover that it's unstuck in time. And there's this strange character, Zethros. You have to make sure you pronounce it correctly. It's not Zethros. It's Zethros. See? Zethros is not Zethros. It's Zethros. And what ends up happening is they say they're taking this station because they need it for a great war. And eventually they get everybody out. The whole reason the station appeared where it did 4 years from where it disappeared was to get all 1,800 people off it so they don't travel with them. And the last thing you see is a very older Sinclair. That's the name of Michael O'Hara's character. He pulls off his helmet and he goes, I tried to warn him, but it just wasn't time. And it's obvious he's an older character, and there's a lot of, what the F is going on here? Now, I know what the F is going on. And anyways, it's a very exciting episode. It's one of the best. If you just want to skip the first season, which I don't recommend you do, or if you do skip it, come back to it, this is one of the key ones you have to watch in order to know what the F's going on. There's a few other ones, and if you care, drop me a line. I'll tell you how to get up to speed. It's all streaming on HBO Max. However, that episode is so effed up on HBO Max. The sound is off. You ever watched it where it's like they're talking and then the lips are moving like 20 minutes after? It's worse than any like Japanese thing. And then by the time you get to the final arc, which gives away some very key things you're going to want to know, they're running the credits for the end music while they're showing the actors doing whatever. Apparently, this is a known issue on HBO Max. Why a major league platform has an episode like that so totally effed up and jacked, it's unwatchable. And it's a key one. It's not even one of those that's just kind of a, yeah, this was a subpar B episode. Fortunately, I have the DVDs. So we just pulled the DVDs up and finished it that way. The only other thing I really, really want to talk about, just I always talk about what I sell on eBay. Let's talk about some of the things I've bought on the eBays. And I've also missed a few auctions, but that's geeking. I don't want to do that. I bought a Supergirl original art from Jesse Hamm. Jesse is an artist that's been throughout Marvel, DC. And this is, of course, the classic Supergirl I like with the V-neck, the puffy sleeves. She's got the hot pants on, but she's got little balls of fabric fringe on top. There's a little Suri with the fringe. Oh, whatever. She looks like she's happy flying with them on. So that was kind of fun to get a piece. I mean, I've not gotten a lot of Supergirl art in the past, obviously, because there's no cons going on. But it was nice to pick that one up. Picked up a book. Hasn't arrived yet. Called Hollywood Heyday. 75 movie legends discuss their golden age careers. How this started is David Fantel and Tom Johnson, apparently, as they ran into different golden age legends who would have come for whatever appearances, they would talk to them and they took pictures and they remembered the stories and they wrote it down in a book. It's a local just seeing it here. What audacity, exclaimed Robert Wagner when he heard about the author's adolescent exploits and nabbing interviews with celebrities of Hollywood's golden age. It was published for the first time a while back. I found a used copy, and I don't care if it's used. The guys I go through are called thrift.books, and they have like over 2 million copies, positive emails or feedback, whatever. I'm just excited to get the book. And I read about this. It was an article in one of the news, and I thought, you know what? This is kind of neat. 25 interviews over 40 years talking to these people, getting wits in them, wisdom, insights, anecdotes from iconic artists. So when I get this, I'll definitely be talking more about it once I read through it. And of course, Corey, if you want to borrow it, you're more than welcome. I picked up a copy of Amazing Heroes number 17. Nothing special about it. Very cheap copy. It just has Supergirl on the cover. So I figure, what the heck? I picked up a book from 1966 called The Monkees by Gene Fawcett and Howard Liss. You open it up, it's a paperback sized book, but it's all in art form. So it's almost like one of those Marvel paperbacks we talked about in the late 70s. This one was published way back in 66, obviously, to tie into the Monkees craze, because other than the photos on the back cover, it's just all drawn. It was drawn. Black and white. I did have a copy of this years ago. Lord knows where it went, so I just picked up a copy to read. Other than that, let's see. I picked up a Shazam Corgi yellow racing car in very, very nice shape. Corgi did a bunch of superhero tie-ins. The biggest one, of course, was the Batmobile, but then they put the Penguin in a car. They had a Jokermobile. It was an ambulance. This one's got a little Shazam face. You can find them all over Beat the Hell, but, you know, if I'm going to spend some bucks, I'll get a good one. And the last thing I picked up was a photo model, Erica Durance, in a Supergirl sexy celebrity 8x10 photo. I don't know if she's actually wearing it or if it was drawn, but she looks good. Now I got to find her autograph. So I'll be stalking people as we go on. The other thing, of course, I buy off these days is just, there's like a big ass run on printer ribbon. Corey, I don't know if you had a chance to go out and get like printer cartridges or anything. They're out everywhere. Walmart, Target, even Office Max, places like that. I suppose it's because everybody's at home doing what they usually do at the office. So I've just been taken to buying them off the eBays, off the Amazons if I can. I also buy packing tape. Sometimes I buy boxes, but for the most part, just get it cheap, get it delivered. That's the way to do it. That's pretty much for it for me for geeking. Corey, how about you? What you geeking on?
They added a whole bunch of Ghost Rider to Marvel Unlimited that I did not know was not on Marvel Unlimited. Because what they do every week, you get the little, oh, okay, here's the here's what we've added. And it used to be they added everything on Monday. Now they add the new books on Monday, and they add older books either Wednesday or Thursday. And they added a bunch of Ghost Riders. Like, oh, I haven't read those since they came out in the Essentials. Because Ghost Rider started before I was reading comics. I think the first issue I picked up was the crossover with Daredevil, drawn by... Come on, Joe. Does Joe know who drew the crossover between Daredevil and Ghost Rider?
Gene Colan.
No.
Oh.
This book was super hot for a while because it was drawn by a pre-X-Men John Byrne.
Oh, wow.
You never read that story?
You know, I must have. It just doesn't ring a bell.
Because what it was, Karen Page had become a supporting character in Ghost Rider. Because remember, she left Matt Murdock to go be a star. And Ghost Rider was the stuntman and blah, blah, blah. They did a two-part story, all drawn by John Byrne. And Byrne was supposed to take over Daredevil, but Bob Brown, who was the main artist, got better. Then when he got sick again, they juggled around and found this new kid, Frank Miller.
Yeah, never lasts.
Yeah, nobody ever heard of him.
That doesn't sound like a real name.
But reading the early stories, because some of the Marvel books by John Warner, where they did the, you know, the after The Exorcist came out, it was, oh, well, we need to do a lot of books about that sort of thing. John Warner wrote some of them. He was in charge of Marvel's Coven at the time. And the books are unreadable. The good thing was the people who wrote Ghost Rider were writing superhero books instead. So, and I even read Ghost Rider Jumps a Shark. Yes, they did a shark story in Ghost Rider because it was the 70s, and when Jaws came out, sharks were everywhere. So those have been a lot of fun. But the main thing I am geeking on, I got all caught up on WandaVision. Joe, have you watched the WandaVision?
I have not, because we've been doing Babylon 5. I've been good so far because I haven't missed any spoilers, but boy, people are getting close.
What it is, it starts out, I read a review of the first issue by a guy who writes sitcoms. And he complained that, oh, if you're going to do a pastiche of 50 sitcoms, why not hire some people to do jokes? And I'm glad that they released the first two episodes at once. Because the first episode, if that's all I would have saw the same thing. But by the second episode, some weirdness starts creeping in. And, wow. I really wish I would have waited and watched the whole thing at once. Because this is a fantastic, fantastic series that it's like the fourth issue kind of grabs you by the head and goes, here you go, fanboy. Just, oh, it's so good. And now it makes me want to see the Winter Soldier and Falcon series, which I guess starts later this week. It's starting. And I'm wondering if they're going to have new series coming out much more often on Disney Plus. Because there for the longest time, it's, okay, here's The Mandalorian. What else has Disney Plus got? We got The Mandalorian. And you can wait a year for another one. They also put out a documentary called Marvel Behind the Mask, which is about secret identities. At least that's where it starts. But then it goes into how Marvel was one of the first companies to have black characters as just part of their books. And they've got some archival footage of Stan from the 70s talking about how Steve Ditko would just put black characters into crowd scenes, or have, you know, if they're going to have a few cops, there'll be a black character there. And he talked about how Steve Ditko drew it that way. And in the first issue of Sergeant Fury, they had a black character, but the people who did the separation thought that it was a mistake that he was colored that way. So they changed the color of the entire book so that he came out looking, you know, white. And Stan had to say, no, this is a black character, because there weren't black characters in books like that. And it goes through, it talks to current creators who, when they saw black characters, how powerful that was for them to see someone who looked like them in a comic. And I was actually watching it when you said you were ready to go. They were interviewing Don McGregor about doing Black Panther, and how the reason he was given the Black Panther series, he was, they called it assistant editor, but really was just a proofreader. He said, why are we putting out this book called Jungle Action, which reprints all these 50s comics about blondes saving the natives? These are so outdated and so out of touch, and really just kind of racist. They said, fine, you do a Black Panther. Here's your budget. Larry Hama talked about when he started working at Marvel, he said, why are we coloring all of the Asians yellow? And this was in the 70s. And Larry Hama, who's Asian, was, can we stop doing that? And it was one of those things where they'd just done it so long, nobody ever thought to do anything different. And it's, I think it's wonderful how it went from, we're going to talk about secret identities, but then we're going to go into how this secret identity stuff merged with what was going on in America in the 60s and 70s. There's a creator they interview who said that he was asked when he worked at Marvel who his favorite black character was, and he said, The Thing. And he explained why The Thing was a perfect allegory for black characters. They have a rabbi, you know, with, he's got a, you know, a list of degrees and everything, talking about how important it was that these comics were created by Jewish immigrants and how that fed into the secret identity. And this is stuff, you know, that we've read in our fanzines and stuff like that for years. But for Disney to put money behind it and put it on their Disney Plus, that's what's really cool. Believe it or not, kids, you've listened to us blather on about funny books for 2 hours because it's a previews episode.
And if you're anywhere else in the country like we are, it's probably bitter-ass cold freezing. So what else you got to do?
And as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic that you like the most. Joe?
It is time for Carman Infantino's 7 Things Guaranteed to Sell a Comic If Shown on the Cover. During the late 1960s, early 1970s, while he was a DC publisher, Carmen Infantino had a list of 7 items which he claimed would have dramatic effects on the sale of any given comic if they were shown on the cover. These items are, number 7, a direct question to the reader, such as, what is the startling secret of the 7th superhero? Number 6, the hero crying. Number 5, the city in flames. Number 4, a purple background. Number 3, motorcycles. Number 2, dinosaurs. And the number 1, Carmen Infantino, 7 things guaranteed to sell if a comic is shown on the cover. Tell them, Corey.
A gorilla?
Gorillas!
By the way, we're not hitting your music yet because I just heard a wonderful, well, kind of mean story about Carmine Infantino.
Oh, I bet you I heard it too. Go ahead, tell the folks.
So, Carmine Infantino was editor-in-chief I forget what they called it back at DC because they didn't have an editor-in-chief, but he was basically in charge of DC, and he had all the editors in his office and was screaming at them that if they had any more late books, they would be fired immediately. It was costing too much money, and his phone rang in his office, and he picked it up and was told to go upstairs to where the suits were, and when he came back down, he said, hey, guys, I've been fired. And the editors all laughed because Carmine told jokes like that. And he didn't, he grabbed his hat, put it on, grabbed his stuff, left. And that was the last time he was in DC's offices. And they were all stunned and shocked and probably felt a little bad that they laughed at him when he said he was fired. Hit my music.
Done, bitches!